Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hour on the radio today, Marcus. I actually forgot to eat breakfast and had just a little bit of lunch. I grabbed, like literally grabbed with my hands, some hash browns on my way out the door and ate some hash browns and two pieces of bacon. I've had a chewy granola bar. I'm powering through. It is my marathon. And we're coming down the home stretch here.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, it's the home stretch. But more importantly, I don't care that you didn't eat breakfast. I'm a little hurt that I've done this show for how long with you now? And I can't even get a mention, like Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick and Marcus Greaves.
The name of the show is Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick, and I always talk to you.
Or something. Or something.
Okay. Hey, man, hello, welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick and also Marcus Greaves.
Yeah, I'll tell you. Yeah, that sounds like I'm the B squad, basically.
You don't want to be that guy.
It's all right, man. But I'm happy you're powering through. You guys had a...
You're a heck of a producer. I appreciate you.
You guys had some good stuff on primetime. I was listening on my way here.
Thank you.
Good.
I appreciate that, man. Three prospects for the Oregon Ducks that are going to be the key to their recruiting class. If they go 3 for 3, it's an absolute unequivocal home run, and you just do backflips and you're thrilled if you're Mario Cristobal. We'll talk about who those three are and their chances of landing them. We're also going to talk to Jordan Johnson, who is in charge of the Pro Football Hall of Fame World Bowl Selection Committee. They had their All-American Academy, 44 of the top prospects in the country, as well as 240, 250-ish kids who are trying to get on the rosters. They all flew into Canton last week, it wasn't a combine because they didn't run a 40, but it was a showcase of skills. Oregon Ducks commit 7. McGee was there. Jay Butterfield, the number 2 pro-style quarterback in the country, also committed to Oregon, and 5-star wide receiver Johnny Wilson were all there. Jordan Johnson helps organize that, takes them to various lectures. We'll get a chance to talk to him about that event, how the Duck recruits looked, and those types of things. But Marcus, you came in to the show today with a topic, and it wasn't Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick and Marcus Greaves. It wasn't that the title needs to be updated. You had a topic you wanted to get to, so the floor is yours, my man.
Well, I really want to get your thoughts on this because I always see it from a player standpoint, obviously, but you obviously see it more than me. I always see this on Twitter now is, players think they're, you know, quote unquote, air quotes right now, slept on. And something that was really interesting to me is there's a difference in my mind between being slept on and not taking it as serious as you should. So the way I look at it is I don't want to say I was slept on because I know for a fact, you know, I got some college exposure. College coaches came to me. I did everything in my power to have them see my potential and at least kind of in a way sell myself that, you know, these coaches are going to want to be interested in me, want me to play for their school, whatever that is. But you see a lot of it now, Andrew, on Twitter where kids say, I'm slept on, right? Say you come out with rankings or whatever, and they're a 3-star, or maybe they're not even ranked, right? And they say, well, I'm slept on. And so it starts to get frustrating after a while because, you know, these kids are like, well, I'm slept on. And then, so you look at it, here's a great example. I love Oregon State to death. I love everything about Oregon State, players, coaches, everything. But when I played in Coach Anderson's era, right, there was a ton of kids saying, I'm slept on. I'm getting slept on, right? I'm, you know, for example, I'm the best receiver in the country, but I'm getting slept on. But it's the fact that when it came down to it, I'm like, okay, well, if he slept on, he's going to show us what he, you know, what he can do. And he did say he doesn't even know how to run a slant route, right? Or he can't read defensive coverages or something along the lines that these guys that keep saying that they're slept on. But at the same time, you're not putting in that work to basically make your craft as good as it can be. And I kind of want to just get your thoughts. Do you think that's kind of what do you think that is now? Is it more of the coaches kind of hyping these kids up? And we've talked about it before, but it's just the fact that you see so many kids say that they're slept on, but they're not taking the steps that they need to take to be a great college football player or even a good college football player or even getting playing time in college, right?
Right. I mean, it starts with entitlement. I mean, the very first thing is you have kids, and some of these kids that are saying they're slept on, they have offers from the Mountain West. They have offers from the Big Sky. What they mean is they feel like they're a Power 5 conference football player. If you've got 6, 7, 8 lower-level offers, you're not probably super slept on. I mean, there are cases where a guy is slept on, but you're getting attention. If you've got thousands of followers, you feel like, okay, I've got 5,000 followers and I broke my school rushing record in Whoville, Oregon. I feel like
in Prineville, Oregon. Where, I'll just say it.
I wasn't going to say Prineville. You're from Prineville, man. I wasn't going to go there. And so they feel like I broke every record at my school. I've only got offers from Boise State at Fresno State. My high school coach says I'm the best football player he's ever seen, which may be true, by the way. They go to the 7-on-7 circuit, and they feel like, you know, they're being recruited by 3 or 4 different 7-on-7 teams because they need a third or fourth corner or a third running back or a second running back. And they go, yeah, I'm slept on. We have a generation that feels slept on. We have a generation of kids who feel like, I mean, I've seen kids who are in the top 100 prospects in America tell me they're slept on. And they have like 25 offers. You're not slept on.
Yeah, not at all.
You're not slept on. What you can say is I'm a little underrated, because the reality is the difference between 80 and 40 sometimes in a national ranking is like being the number 4 corner and the number 2 corner.
Yeah,
that can be really nitpicky in terms of why you feel that way. Some people base it on projection and who has the best NFL body or potential NFL body, while others say, I'll take the best kid right now.
Yeah.
And because of that, you get discrepancies in rankings. I just think we do too much of it, and I see a lot of it in the state of Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go to, and I have, you know, you go to the opening. I didn't go this year, obviously. It was in Dallas. But you go to these big time events or these big time 7-on-7 tournaments and see a guy like Johnny Wilson. Johnny Wilson's 6'6", 225 pounds, and is fast.
Yeah.
He's a 5-star wide receiver. And sometimes I feel like these kids who complain, like, I'm the number 7 kid in Oregon, I should be number 3. I feel like, honestly, come here, hold my hand. Come here. We're going to go walk to the sideline. You point out a guy whose spot you could take on this field. If you find one, I'll move you up in the rankings and no longer rate you at number 7 or whatever. There aren't any kids. Andy Alfieri went to the Pro Football Academy. He's been my number one. He's been Jordan Johnson's number one for almost a year in the state of Oregon. You have every once in a while people behind the scenes in the, you know, in the DMs like, man, you're way wrong. It's definitely this kid. Andy Alfieri held his own, and he's a white kid. So of course, anytime he goes to one of those All-American events, it's who's the white boy. It happens every time who's the filthy white boy.
Oh yeah. There's always one.
Andy Alfieri was getting the who's the filthy white boy talk. He's good. He's really good. And he's even better in those showcase events because he's such a system guy. He'll do his job and only his job, and he won't freelance, that sometimes he gets lost in the shuffle with how truly good he is. He's head and shoulders above everyone in Oregon, and he's going in the state of Oregon for this year, and he's going to Cal.
Yeah.
He's not going to Alabama. He's not going to Notre Dame. He's not going to Michigan. He's not going to Texas. He's not going to USC or Oregon. He's going to Cal, and he's the best player in Oregon. And sometimes these kids who are 6, 7, 8, who are like, I'm slept on, you're right. Sometimes they don't study the game. Sometimes they don't even love the game.
Yeah.
They love the attention.
100%.
But we get into this situation where they still want to say, I'm slept on. I shouldn't be 7. I should be 4. Honestly, this year in Oregon, and this is the funniest one, the number 2 kid in Oregon is like the 700th best recruit. The number 7 kid in Oregon is like the 1,200.
Yeah.
If you honestly want to fight for slot number 875 and you think you shouldn't be 1,200, you're worried about the wrong stuff, man. You should be worried about how to jump into that top 400 or 500.
Yeah.
That is the problem. You get too many people who are like, I'm a 3-star. I made it. Or I'm a 3-star. Why am I not a 4-star? And like I said, some of these kids, I want to hold their hand and walk with them and say, you cannot let go of my hand. You need to listen to me talk.
Yeah.
And you need to watch this football field. I want to make sure you're watching this football field. And some of the kids who were the most upset about their ranking could not hold a candle to the kids that are in those All-American showcase events. I've seen unreal kids. You know, I was talking to Jordan Johnson. I'm sure he'll talk about it. He's going to be on at 7:30. And he said, just for fun, they switched the position guys and the linemen. And there were 6'6", 310-pound linemen, just for a fun drill, lining up at receiver, and they could get out of their breaks, and they could turn their hips when they were corner better than the average all-league guy in the state of Oregon.
Yeah.
That's how good, really, really good is, and some kids just don't understand that. Elijah Molden is the best story I have. 4-star wide receiver, corner. just a four-star corner. He was very good, but he wasn't battling for five-star status or anything. He got mad at a 7-on-7 tournament and played with his hands behind his back and did not give up a completion because his footwork was that good. He is still, as a sophomore, just a special teams player at Washington.
Yeah.
That's how good you have to be.
Yeah.
So if you aren't that good, if you aren't that good where you can play behind your back, with your hands behind your back in 7-on-7 competition and basically shut your side of the field down, if you're not that good, you're probably not good enough.
Yeah.
So for these kids who are like, I had a pass breakup and one interception in 7-on-7, cool, do it behind your back.
Yeah, yeah.
And then tell me you're slept on. But until you can do that and you can read coverages and your technique is as good as Elijah Molden's, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what it was too, because, you know, there's been a couple guys that's, you know, behind the scene have reached out to me saying, listen, man, I'm slept on, you know, and they're from high school. They're from, you know, some college kids from all around, you know, D2 to, you know, D3. They're reaching out saying, I'm slept on, man. Like, I'm trying to go to that next level. I'm trying to play in the Power Five. But I'm like, listen, man, it's not a bad thing to play college football in general, but you have to be realistic. Like, that's why I'm saying I came out of high school and I went to a bunch of camps, right? I went to the camps to get exposure, like I was saying. And there was a handful of ones where I was probably in the top five, you know, ranked athlete at the camp. And that's what I'm saying, man. I ran a solid, probably a 4.4 flat, and I was 200 pounds as a running back, and I'm 6 foot. That's pretty dang good. And then you get to college. I got to Oregon State. It's not even, you know, a U of O, you know, Clemson, obviously, Alabama, all those bigger ones. That was Oregon State. Granted, they just came off a 9-4 season, but that was Oregon State, and I played special teams up until my second to last season. I didn't see the field at all other than special teams. I was a kick returner, and I was on punt return. I was on all the special teams, but my primary, you know, what I had to do, my role was kick returner. They say, okay, you know, you have the speed, you have the size, you have the moves. You're going to be our kick returner, but you're just not at that level yet to start or play at running back. And I understood that. And then what did I have to do? I had to learn the game. I had to understand. I had to be a smart guy, right? I'd be like, okay, if this guy, you know, if they're in this defense, how can I, you know, how can I make the explosive run if the defensive line is slanting this way or that way? Understanding defense. And guys don't do that anymore. They just, like you said, they want nothing but the spotlight, but they don't want to put in the work. They'll say that they do. They'll take the quick little video of them, you know, working out on the field saying, you know, this will be my realest year. And then the season comes around and I'm like, okay, well, what's cover two? And they're like, well, I scored a touchdown the other day. I'm
right,
like, no,
yeah,
I don't care.
There are three kids that distinctly I remember as feeling like they were horribly, horribly slept on. Just like it was silly. Jermar Jefferson, and I came on Dirt and Sprague on signing day and was like, how does this kid, how was he not a four-star? How was he not recruited by the entire Pac-12?
Oh, absolutely.
And his thing was, he didn't say anything about it. He just came super prepared to college and killed it. Justin Herbert, who never said a word about his recruitment, might end up being the number one pick in the draft. I went and saw him, knew about him as a junior, but went and saw him as a senior and was just like, oh my God. I went and saw the Elite 11 that same year, and they said it's a down year for quarterbacks. He was no question one of the best three quarterbacks I'd seen in the country in high school for that year, and I'd seen the top 19. There are 19 kids at the Elite 11. They choose 11 to be considered the Elite 11. And the last one was Cole Turner. If you don't know who Cole Turner is, that's okay. Wide receiver at Clackamas. Jordan Johnson and I labeled him our breakout player in Oregon for 7-on-7 football when he was a sophomore. He was coming off like a 200-yard season. He ended up at Nevada and had interest from Oregon State, scored a touchdown as a true freshman. Cole Turner used to get up in the morning, never talked about it. I don't even know if I've ever talked about it. Used to get up in the morning to work on his routes because he was a big 6'6", 210, 215-pound receiver. Felt like he was slept on. Never tweeted it. Just felt like he was slept on. So at 6 in the morning, he'd get up and go to Lakeridge. Elvis Akpla is the coach at Lakeridge. He played in the NFL for the Philadelphia Eagles. He played for the Oregon Ducks. Very good route runner. He'd kill me for saying this, but not the best, like, pure athlete. I mean, he's a good athlete. He played in the NFL, but not just like some superstar freak OBJ-level athlete.
Yeah.
His thing was that he would block, and he would be this elite route runner and great with his hands and do everything the right way so that he could get playing time. And he would work with Cole Turner. Cole Turner searched him out and said, do you care if I work out with you at 6 a.m. a few times a week? And he did that for like a year. And then he ended up going to Nevada and being a playmaker. Those are the three kids I remember being super slept on.
Mm-hmm.
They all did things right away as true freshmen, and none of them talked about it.
Yeah.
The kids who talk about it, generally, you know who another one is? Josiah Irish.
Yeah.
I know for a fact that Josiah Irish was the next guy in line to get an offer at like three. I think it was three. It might have been two. High-level Pac-12 schools. High-level Pac-12. The upper echelon of the Pac-12 at receiver, but they got the guy right ahead of him to commit, mm-hmm. and so they didn't offer him. And so Josiah Irish, in air quotes here, trickled down in it. To Oregon State, and there was no question he was an absolute monster and going to be a monster, and you just go, man, there are some teams that are going to regret that. Never talked about it. Yeah. Going to be a big-time playmaker. The kids who are the most slept on are busy grinding and busy working and aren't going to talk about it. Mm-hmm. If your whole thing is I need likes on social media and loves on social media to validate me being slept on, let the film validate it for you.
Yeah.
Let the work validate it for you. Do not expect likes and retweets to be your validation and your salvation as a football player. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
There are three players for Oregon that they can get right now that will dramatically alter the success or failure of this recruiting class. I'll tell you who they are and what Oregon's chances are of landing them next on Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. Before we get into the three game-changing Oregon targets, now again, if they get three for three, you're doing backflips. They get one of three. You're a little disappointed if they get two of three. Solid, solid effort. Before we get into who those are, there was a big trade in the NBA. Russell Westbrook headed to Houston for Chris Paul. First round picks in 2024 and 2026 and pick swaps in 2021 and 2025. Russell Westbrook and James Harden reunited, not in OKC, but Houston. Chris Paul headed to New Orleans, and it's, to OKC. And it sounds like Chris Paul is going to be part of another trade. That perhaps there was an overpay in this trade for picks, knowing full well that if OKC has to send Chris Paul somewhere else because of his contract, they'll have to attach picks to it. So it looks like Chris Paul may not be done traveling. He should not buy a house anytime soon if he was going to in Oklahoma City. There are three prospects. And what it boils down to, there are three prospects for Oregon that can be game changers to this class. That if you look at them and you see on signing day that they went three for three, you say they hit an absolute home run. This is a stellar, unreal recruiting class. If they go two for three, you're very happy. If you go one for three, you're a little disappointed, but you're glad you got one headliner. And you could have made this group four. But Oregon already got Jay Butterfield, the number two pro-style passer in the country. Getting him is a win. They had to get a quarterback in this recruiting class. They had all their eggs, seemingly, in the basket of DJ Uiagalelei. When he picked Clemson over Oregon, less than a week later, the Ducks get Jay Butterfield again, the number two pro-style quarterback in the country. A massive get. Now, some of these guys that aren't on this list, Keely Ringo, Oregon would be thrilled if they got Keely Ringo. They recently made his top eight. Probably not going to happen. Justin Flo, five-star linebacker. You'd be thrilled if you got Justin Flo, but he's probably going to USC. These are realistic guys that Oregon's got a shot at. Number one, Savelle Smalls, the number one defensive end outside linebacker in the country, the number four prospect in the country. He's been on the show, a couple of times now. Marcus, how many times? Savelle been on twice now?
Yeah, he's been on twice.
Twice.
Because he's probably, between him and G. Scott were my favorite.
Yeah, I like Savelle. Savelle has eliminated Washington. He wants to get away from home, and also I think the pitch at Washington turned him off a little bit. And listen, if you compare one, he's the top-rated kid Oregon has a legitimate shot at. He's the number four recruit in the country. Anytime you get the number four recruit in the country, you're really excited. He's eliminated most of the Pac-12. The only real team with a shot right now in the Pac-12 is Oregon. So if he decides, yes, I want to get away from home, but not too far away from home, not Alabama, not Clemson, not Florida, not Florida State, but I do want to get away a little bit from home. Oregon's a logical choice. And if you get him on opposite sides of your defensive line or on opposite sides of your pass rush, on opposite sides of the line of scrimmage, you've got Kayvon Thibodeau and Savelle Smalls. That is unreal. That is a level of pass rusher on either side that only the Alabama and Clemsons of the world can compare or can have anything even remotely close to it. Nobody in the Pac-12 has even one guy right now that's as good as Kayvon Thibodeau or Savelle Smalls, or at least as good as they project to be. To have both of them on either side of your defensive line is ridiculous. Chances of it happening, pretty slim. Listen, Oregon's in the hunt. They're the only Pac-12 school in the hunt, and you've got to feel good about that. Oregon did a nice job of being involved for the Washington product. But the reality is, I think, and I've said this all along, I think he's a kid who's enamored with the ACC and SEC. I think, not gun to his head. I don't like to say that about a high school kid. But realistically, if he had to choose right now, I think he'd choose an SEC or an ACC school. I don't see it happening. But Oregon's got a shot. And anytime they've got a shot and anytime they host a kid on an official visit or on any visit where the kid gets to be around the campus during a game day situation, they've got a shot. We saw that with Kayvon Thibodeau. If you'd have told me a year ago at this exact time, Oregon's going to get Kayvon Thibodeau, I said, man, they would have to blow him away on a visit because it's probably not going to happen. And they just slowly built on it, slowly built on it, slowly built on it. By the end of the day, by the time signing day arrived, they got him. Savelle Smalls is that guy. The guy that you say, things have to go right. He's got to visit on a great weekend, and they've got to blow him away. He's got to really build a relationship with Keith Hayward, Andy Avalos, and Mario Cristobal, but it's possible. The next player is a five-star wide receiver, Johnny Wilson. Johnny Wilson, 6'6", 210, 215-pound wide receiver, looks like a tight end, runs like a wide receiver, and simply put, you watch this Oregon football team the past few years, and the one thing that's really been missing is depth at the receiver position. Now, listen, you can convince me that Dillon Mitchell was a very good receiver. He was. He was a good college receiver, but he was a late-round pick. Jeff Mail, great college receiver. Late NFL pick, late addition, not a life-altering, not a program-altering talent. Johnny Wilson is a program-altering talent, the likes of which Oregon really hasn't had at the wide receiver position since DeAnthony Thomas, who was also, again, a hybrid running back and a totally different player at under 6 feet tall. Johnny Wilson is that Clemson, Alabama, big-bodied receiver that can go up, climb the ladder, and pull a ball down. When you need a big play on 3rd and 18 late in a game, you can feel relatively confident that if you throw one up to him, he's going to go up, climb the ladder, and get it. This is a kid that projects as kind of a bigger N'Keal Harry. How much would Oregon love to add Johnny Wilson into the fold? Right now, chances? I think Oregon's the leader. If I had to pick right now, and I'm not ready to do a prediction piece, but I'm close, I'd say Johnny Wilson ends up being an Oregon Duck. Great relationship with Marcus Arroyo. Great relationship with Mario Cristobal. He's connected to the staff. When they went on their satellite camp tour, they talked to him for a long time. He showed up to one of the events. I don't know if he worked out, signed up, and then elected right at the last minute not to do it, but spent almost the entire camp talking to the Oregon coaches, and it looks very much like they are simpatico. I think Johnny Wilson ends up picking Oregon, and that is about as big time as it gets from the wide receiver position. And I know he's not the number one receiver in the country, but for what he could be, for his ceiling, there aren't many players out there that are better than Johnny Wilson. 6'6", 224 pounds. Right now, his crystal ball's on 24/7 Sports, by the way. I've told you, I think he ends up picking Oregon. They have him at 83% Oregon, 17% Washington. So there is a belief out there, and a fairly strong and growing stronger belief out there, that Oregon's going to land Johnny Wilson. And given their need at wide receiver, it's absolutely massive. I think he plays I think he plays as a true freshman. You pair him with Micah Pittman and you feel really good about your receiving core. Something Oregon hasn't been able to say outside of their number one guy in a long time. And I remember the Sammy Parker, Keenan Howry team, you know, the Tony Hartley, Damon Griffin team. Those are good receiving cores, but those are from the 90s and 2001. There haven't been many years where Oregon's had two really good receivers. They will have two if they get Johnny Wilson and pair him with Micah Pittman. And then the guest from 2 weeks ago, whose stock just continues to absolutely explode, Noah Sewell, the younger brother of Penei Sewell, went to the opening recently, and oh my God. Did you see his testing numbers?
I didn't. Were they just crazy?
Oh, my goodness. He's 266 pounds, 6'1" or 6'2", and his shuttle run was a 4.13. That is faster than many NFL receivers. Whoa. It's the 99th percentile in the shuttle run. At 6'1", 6'2", 266 pounds, he's one of the fastest kids in the country in the shuttle. He is absolutely, that just says right there, any debate about maybe defensive end, that just screams linebacker. Because what you want in your linebacker is to be able to pursue the football quickly in those first few steps. Mm-hmm. A 4.13 shuttle time. That's what you expect from guys like DeAnthony Thomas. And seriously, That's a shuttle time you expect from a LaMichael James, DeAnthony Thomas. You don't expect it. You don't expect it at all from Noah Sewell. His vertical leap, 36 inches. And his 40 time, 4.6 something.
What?
Yeah. 4.7 flat.
That's a...
He's the... And 24/7 had the stat. I don't have it in front of me, and I apologize for that. He's the first player since 2015 or the second player since 2015 to weigh more than 240 pounds or more than 230 pounds and have as good a 40 vertical and shuttle time as he had. Either the first or the second since 2015. Out of all the prospects, the hundreds and thousands of prospects they've tested, Noah Sewell is an absolute freak. And what we've seen now, both at the Rivals five-star challenge and now the opening, and the opening has, you know, not only all the Nike guys there, but the 24/7 guys there, the Rivals guys there, and everyone's takeaway is, I don't know exactly what this is. I don't know exactly how he shakes out, but this is a NFL-level freaky athlete. He's freaky NFL explosive at 266 pounds as a 17, 18-year-old kid.
Yeah. That well, the good thing about him is the fact that, just put it in perspective like this, say he, and we already know obviously he's great because of everything we've seen from him, but imagine he gets to college, right, and maybe he's not as comfortable being a college athlete just yet. Maybe he has some time to grow and everything like that. The coaches have a about as good of, I guess, a prototype as you can want, right? You can mold him into any kind of football player you want. But just imagine him as a linebacker in the Pac-12. That's the thing that made Ryan also good at running back when he played at Oregon State, was the fact that he was bigger and he was faster. So now you think of someone like him, what would you say? He was 260?
266.
266 at 6'1". There's absolutely no running back in the conference that could even remotely come close to blocking him. And quite frankly, I'm not even sure if there is a running back side to side that is going to be able to outrun him like that. Because, I mean, his shuttle's fast, man. That means he has not only great speed, like you said, but he has great hips. He could drop his hips, go right and left, whatever he needs to do. That's like freaky athlete. So if you're Coach Cristobal, if you get a guy like that, and all you have to do is mold him into however you want. You kind of just add on to the masterpiece. He's already like a work of art. I'm imagining the Mona Lisa, and all you do is add maybe a pinch of something in there, and then it's going to be perfect, man.
Chances of getting him, high. Very high.
Oof.
I've already put in my prediction that he picks Oregon. So Oregon's going to get, I think, Johnny Wilson and Noah Sewell, and they have a very outside chance of getting Savelle Smalls. You get those two. So you get Noah Sewell, who right now is making a strong case for being the number one inside linebacker in the country. You get Johnny Wilson, who's arguably, listen, he's at number five. I think some have him at like 4 and 3. He's one of the top three or four wide receivers, top five wide receivers in the country. That's massive. You get the number two pro-style quarterback in the country. That's massive. Oregon's doing some really, really big things on the recruiting trail. I still don't think they finish with a top 10 recruiting class, even with Johnny Wilson and Noah Sewell. Why? They're going to have a smaller class, and they needed offensive linemen, a lot of offensive linemen, on a year where the West Coast just didn't produce very many 4- and 5-star offensive linemen. They've had to go get 3-star and 4-star offensive linemen from the Midwest and the East and the South. And because of that, when you get 5 or 6 guys in your class that are 3-star, solid kids, offensive linemen, that I think Mario Cristobal do fantastic with, but when you have to go out and load up on some 3-stars at some key positions because they're not being produced on the West Coast, it makes it really tough to really jump into that top 10. But I think Oregon fans should be thrilled. Because as it stands, again, right now, if I had to predict, I'd say they get Jay Butterfield. Already got him. Number two pro-style quarterback in the country. Noah Sewell predicted they're going to get him. I think he's either the number one or number two inside linebacker in the country, and you can feel pretty good about that ranking. And Johnny Wilson, one of the top five wide receivers in the country. Those are three headliners. Those are three guys that if you had any of those three guys, you'd feel great about them being your headliner. There are multiple Mark Helfrich years where Oregon doesn't have anybody within 100 spots of any of those three guys in the rankings, and they might get all three. Kudos to Mario Cristobal and his staff if they can pull it off. And then cherry on top, if you go 4 for 4 and you're able to get Savelle Smalls, Holy cow, you're suddenly talking about a top 10 class. I just don't see it happening. Jordan Johnson got a chance to see Jay Butterfield, got a chance to see Johnny Wilson, got a chance to see Seven McGee at the Pro Football Hall of Fame Academy in Canton, Ohio, just this past week. He just got back last night at 2 a.m. I said, you got to come on the show and tell Oregon fan exactly what they're getting potentially in Seven McGee, Jay Butterfield, and Johnny Wilson. He joins us next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan. Jordan Johnson, who normally does the Andrew Nimmick Recruiting Podcast with me, we break down Oregon high school football. He's got a new gig, and he works with the Pro Football Hall of Fame on selecting World Bowl All-Americans to compete. It's like the Adidas All-American Bowl, and it is on the rise. Kayvon Thibodeau, the number one prospect in the nation, played in the World Bowl just last year. They held their NFL and Pro Football Hall of Fame All-American Academy this past week in Canton, Ohio. 40 elite All-Americans were there. He got a chance to see him, analyze them, and break things down, and he joins us now to talk about it. Jordan, how you doing, man? Jet lagged?
Good. A little bit, man. I'm good, though.
Well, I want to start here. Jay Butterfield, Oregon quarterback, number two pro-style quarterback in the nation. I haven't had a chance to see him live yet, which has kind of been a bucket list thing for me for this recruiting cycle. Hasn't happened yet. You got a chance to see him in Canton, Ohio. How did he look? What is Oregon getting in the number two pro-style quarterback in the country? As most people know, Jay Butterfield committed to Oregon.
Yeah, I saw him. This is the second time I saw him. We do those regional events where these kids qualify for Canton, where we were at this last weekend and or these last couple of days. And he's such a good kid. It's one of those ones where you immediately want to root for him. Separate from his ability, he's got what you need from the standpoint of just being a QB and a leader on and off the field. Obviously, if you're the number two ranked pro style kid in the country, you're doing something right. He's smooth. He's smart. He's the guy that I think his ceiling is incredibly high. 6'6", 205, and about as intelligent as you're going to get from a quarterback standpoint.
One of the things that stood out to me talking to him during the tail end of his recruitment was that he was pretty egoless. I mean, I've seen kids who just think they can walk on water, and he was a kid that really is humble about it, knows he's got a lot of work to do and a long way to go to being, you know, potentially an NFL quarterback. You got a chance to see him up close and personal for a week. Is he starting to get an ego, or do you feel like he's still that humble kid that wants to learn and is hungry to learn?
Yeah, not even close. He's because you hear a lot of people say, oh, he's just a good kid. I mean, he's just that guy. I mean, I've heard it said a lot. He legit is one of those kids that you want your daughter to date. The guy that is just incredibly humble that, you know, when you're out there with 40 All-Americans, you're treated a certain way back at home, back at school, on the field, and it makes it tough moving forward. Part of what the NFL and the Hall of Fame is doing is they're trying to give these kids lessons in life at an early age, and breaking down statistics. For example, 80 kids invited to the All-American game a few years back, 16 of them ended up in the NFL, 64 did not. And so basically it makes it tough when you're treated like this early because you don't keep – well, there's a lot of kids that don't keep grinding and doing what they need to do in order to get to that level. So he's one of those guys that will continue to stay focused and work hard. And the Ducks should be stoked with what they got there.
The other Oregon commit that was there doing big things, Seven McGee. I've been on record as saying Seven McGee is the best skill position high school freshman I've ever seen a couple years ago. Just a freak. The DeAnthony Thomas comparison gets thrown around way too often. But of the kids I've seen, he is the most like DeAnthony Thomas. Please tell me I'm not insane, that this kid is in fact special, and I'm just not off my rocker with how good I think this kid could be.
No, you're right, because you said that about a year ago, and I took notice of them when you said that, and I've been watching them since then as well. And what I like about Seven, he's another kid like Jay that is just loves the game. He literally tried to get every rep he could, offense, defense. He was even kicking. He was trying to show his kicking skills, which was funny. But he was a kid that was incredibly enjoyable just to be around, love the game. He's only a 21, as you know, so he's going to be around. He's got a couple years left to do his thing, and before he's done, I mean, Oregon's doing a really good job. I mean, they are they're really getting the right guys, I think, guys that aren't going to do something stupid off the field, that will continue to get better each and every year. And when you're getting these high-profile recruits that also are legit people, that's going to be a big win in the end.
The last guy I wanted to ask you about, and we'll get you out on this because we're up against it on the clock a little bit. Johnny Wilson, 5-star wide receiver. Oregon is considered the favorite. I talked about earlier on the show. I think Oregon ends up getting him 6'6", 225 pounds. Some people worry about whether or not he'll be a tight end because he's so big. I think he's going to be a receiver, an explosive one at that. What did you see from Johnny Wilson? What do you compare him to, and how do you think he projects at the college and maybe even NFL level?
So he is a 5-star. Wingspan-wise, the largest, I mean, I guess I can't say. Based on what I saw, the wingspan, I've never seen a larger wingspan. I mean, I don't know what it is exactly, but it's, like, big. And Johnny Wilson is another dude who is just incredibly deserving of that 5-star ranking. There's no questions. I think if the Ducks get him, I mean, he can play multiple spots and you can feel incredibly comfortable. He's another guy. If they can get some of these dudes that we're talking about, or obviously they've got some of them already, but if they can add a Johnny Wilson to the mix, you're looking at a top 5 recruiting class in the country potentially. He's the real deal, man. He's a great kid. And I just got to get this in. Andy Alfieri, because he was our Oregon guy that was out there, and he killed it the whole time. I mean, he was one of those guys that opened eyes among people that didn't necessarily know who he was from around the nation, these big names that we're talking about. But it was great to have this Northwest presence, this Oregon kid out there killing it and competing and beating a lot of the guys that we're talking about.
Yeah, he's committed to Cal, the Jesuit running back linebacker. It's funny, Marcus and I were talking about this, and you know a kid is doing well from Oregon when people start asking who the nasty white boy is. And I imagine he got a couple of who's the nasty white boys.
Yeah, something like that. It was like just shaking the head and like, where'd this kid come from? And he's another guy that he just wants to play. I mean, Andy's a breath of fresh air in today's game because he just wants to work and have fun. He's not showing off. He ain't showboating. He's doing his thing. And once again, another kid that's gonna kill it and play early at Cal.
Really looking forward to the World Bowl in a hurry. And part of it's because the NFL has thrown some weight behind it. The Pro Football Hall of Fame has thrown some weight behind it. The World Bowl has gone from 0 to 60, where it wasn't even a thing that long ago. And now I think you could make an argument it's the premier game in the entire country in terms of roster and star power. Really looking forward to that. Do you know off the top of your head when it is, where it's broadcast, that whole deal, or is that still being worked out?
Yeah, no, it'll be on CBS in December. I'm not sure on the exact date. I think like 22nd. Kayvon Thibodeau, as you know, the number one recruit in the nation, among many others, played in it last year in Mexico City. And it will be on CBS. So, it's legit, man. I mean, we're talking about the guys that are playing in it. It's the majority of the nation's top athletes. And, it's exciting to be a part and be able to be around these guys and select. And for the kids that are to go and compete, that's fun too, because there's a lot of kids, as you know, that get overlooked, and it's nice to reward those guys when they go out and do a good job and compete against some of these top guys we're talking about.
No doubt. I do got to get out, but give us one name and then we'll let you go. Give us one name of a kid who really stood out, that was kind of maybe an under the radar name coming into the camp but went to an All-American camp and showed he belonged, maybe even just at the D1 level even.
So I got to say this name, Damon DeMoss, who everybody knows.
Oh, my goodness.
Go watch his – go look at his Twitter. Go pull up his Twitter. Go look at this flip that he did at the opening a couple weeks ago, the 5-star committed to Texas A&M. Such a good kid, Damon DeMoss. Hollywood DeMoss, excuse me. He flipped, and, like, he didn't land for a while. He just hung up there. He's got 1.2 million views, I think is what it said last time I looked. He is – just a freak show. I mean, the way his body control, the fact that he loves the game as much as he does, he was working with all these Hall of Fame coaches, these NFL guys that are back coaching, Freddie Barnett, Pete Metzelaar, Rob Woodson, Kurt Gobea, all these guys that are out there coaching these All-Americans, and he was just hungry for more. So I really liked that 5-star kid that just wanted to be coached. He didn't want to hear about what he was doing right. He wanted to know what he was doing wrong and how he could improve. And this is easily one of the best players in the country. So go check his film out. Also, Relique Brown, the freshman out of Edison in Cali. He's got like 21 offers, Oregon among everybody else. He was the only going to be a sophomore, the only 2023 out there, or 22 that we had out there. So those are a couple of kids I really liked.
Thank you, Jordan. Appreciate you. Podcast this week, man. We gotta put something together next week early. We got to put something together. Oregon High School football recruiting. We'll come up with something that'll be interesting. I think a re-ranking of the class of 2025 or the class of 2015 and 2016 for Oregon High School kids is in the cards here coming up very soon.
Yeah, buddy. I'm all over it.
All right. Thanks. We got to talk about this trade, man. Listen, I've been trying to put it off. There are no recruiting visits right now. It is the deadest of dead periods in recruiting right now because nobody can take any official visits. And normally they can throughout most of the spring now and fall because of the new rules. So
thanks for joining us for recruiting with Andrew.
Whoa, my bad.
Is that just the test? You're just giving me,
yeah, I'm
just trying to keep
me
on edge. If we're not going to talk about recruiting, cut him off.
I'm like, all right, we're done with this.
I like the drum. I like the drumline thing going on. What'd you think of the trade?
I'm not a fan, man. You know,
For whom or both?
For OKC, it's okay because at least you get picks out of it. You could tell Dame sent them in a rebuild. But I think it's just the thing with OKC is, or the thing with Houston is, you know, James Harden didn't work well with Chris Paul. They didn't get along, as we all know. But you give up one ball dominant guy for a guy who's even more ball dominant. Granted, they're friends, but I know for a fact things can happen where, you know, egos might get in the way, roles might get in the way. And I think that's something that people have always said about Russell Westbrook is he doesn't really know his role, right? And so his role at OKC for so long was he was kind of that second guy. And then he got the chance to be the first guy, right? And he was getting all these triple-doubles, crazy stats. Everyone loved it. But they didn't really win, right? They didn't really take that next step. And then you get a guy like Paul George, and they kind of worked. They still obviously didn't come up. They didn't meet expectations where a lot of people thought. And now you look at it with Houston, it's kind of the same situation. Houston's a better team than OKC, but how are James Harden and Russell Westbrook going to work because both are very ball dominant?
So for folks who missed it, Russell Westbrook is headed to the Houston Rockets for Chris Paul. First round picks in 2024 and 2026, and the option for pick swaps in 2021 and 2025. Shocker, first reported by Adrian Woj.
Wojnarowski.
I can't do it, man. I've heard it said like four different times, and I thought I had it, and I was all gonna like flex on it, and it's Woj. It's a league of duos now. I mean, that's the reality, and the way you look at it with the Houston Rockets is Chris Paul was so banged up throughout the regular season and often in the playoffs that it kind of did feel like, yes, they've got some nice pieces with Eric Gordon and Clint Capella, but they didn't really have a dynamic duo. They had a banged up Chris Paul and James Harden doing a lot by himself. This now gives them two alphas, and you can question how they're going to play together. You can question how their roles are going to change when they have to share the basketball. The one thing you cannot question is talent for talent. Their duo is close to as good or as good as anyone else has in the West. Yes, LeBron's fantastic and Anthony Davis. Yes, Kawhi and Paul George. But Russell Westbrook was the MVP of the league not long ago, and James Harden has finished second twice in back-to-back years. Arguably, you're getting, I mean, you have James Harden, who's maybe the second or third best player in the league, depending on how you want to slice that up. And then you've got Russell Westbrook, and even if you don't like and love the way he plays, he has to be one of the top 10 to 12 players in the league. And I don't think you could say that about Chris Paul anymore.
Yeah.
Particularly given how inconsistent he is health-wise. Or maybe you'd say he's consistently banged up and he's very consistent. You don't know what to expect. You've got Russell Westbrook, and yeah, you don't feel great about what the contract's going to look like by the end of it. But this Houston Rockets team is close. They've been close in back-to-back years, and they needed to do something to shake it up, not blow it up. They upgraded at the point guard position. I don't think you can argue that Westbrook's an upgrade over current Chris Paul. All-time, fine, there's a debate. But as of right now, you'd way rather have Westbrook than Chris Paul. I think that bought them life. And then you look at OKC. OKC adds Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Danilo Gallinari in the trade of Chris Paul to the Clippers. They also add Chris Paul, which is nice. I mean, in the Russell Westbrook trade. So you got to feel good about those pieces. Maybe Chris Paul mentors Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Or maybe there's another trade coming, and it sounds like there is. They're going to have to trade Chris Paul. But they also now have seven additional first-round draft picks and four pick swaps, both pick swaps with the Clippers. I believe they're 2024 and 2020. Let's see. Pick swaps 2023 and 2025. Both of those pick swaps come after Kawhi and Paul George's current contracts are up. because both guys only signed three-year deals. Listen, OKC got the absolute most they could out of this thing. Sam Presti is, you got to argue, maybe a genius with this. About a week ago, Paul George comes to him and says, it's time to blow this thing up. I'm ready to go. There are a lot of teams that trade their all-stars when they say it's time to go, and they get a pick and a bad contract out of it. Instead, he has seven first-round draft picks, a young point guard, Danilo Gallinari, a solid power forward, a Chris Paul that is aging. Love what OKC did. Yeah, phenomenal job. Smart. Next week, recruiting news. Purely, simply recruiting news on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan. Thank you, as always, for listening.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.